anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk, with Steve and Nathan Bove. With market insights and so much more, talk to Steve and Nathan now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Steve and Nathan Bove on AM 790 WPRV.
Well, good evening. Welcome to the Money Talk show with Steve and Nathan Bove. That sounds nice, huh?
It does.
Yeah, I like that.
That's me.
I like that. That's Nathan. Nathan's our historian. On Wednesday evenings, we do a little financial history on the program to try to make things more interesting and more educational and entertaining.
Entertaining.
What we do by itself is kind of dry, huh?
It can be from time to time, so it's good to interject a little... little different things and topics here and there. I always thought the best reason to do the history stuff was not only because I love it and it's fun for me, but but I think because for listeners listening, it really gives you perspective. You know, if something's happening, like right now, for example, right, what's going on economically? Well, the big news this week was these tariffs, right? Donald Trump and his administration is passing these, or is claiming they're going to be passing tariffs, 25% on imported steel, 10% on aluminum, with some exceptions here and there. So the first thing I thought of was, wow, when was the last time administration raised tariffs, and what kind of impact did it have on the economy?
Right.
And I'm working on that because there's a lot of research that goes into that. So next week we're going to go dive into that in great detail. But I did find it interesting, some of the research that I did today was that from about 1945 on, this is when you hear this term free markets, right? So that free markets would be lower trade barriers, lower tariffs. And since the 1940s, that's the way the United States has operated
down.
And that's for a couple of reasons. One was because we became more and more of a consuming country and less of a manufacturing country.
Right.
And we're importing a lot more goods. But the second reason, one, I didn't really think about this, was after World War II, many of our allies were just decimated. Right? Think about Europe, right?
Oh, yeah.
Just totally destroyed. And if we had tariffs, protective tariffs up, that would not encourage our allies to grow. You know, so tariffs were lowered a great deal after World War II to encourage growth in other economies that were our allies, like Europe.
Yeah, right.
And so that was one of the reasons why.
You know, would risk your life to save them from bombs, you know.
Well, the other
help them financially,
too. The other reason is that we were subsidizing their regrowth, right? The Marshall Plan, which was passed under Harry Truman, sent billions of dollars over to Europe. So it would be kind of counterintuitive for us to then give them money and not try to encourage growth over there.
Sure.
So it kind of makes sense. Another thing I found fascinating, too, was tariffs were the main source of revenue for the United States government before income taxes.
Right.
So right from the get-go of the country all the way up till... what was it, 1912, 1913, income tax went into place. That was the main source of revenue. But the politics behind it were really fascinating, and we'll talk about that more next week, I think.
And the market is seems to be a bit concerned about possible trade wars that this may develop, but I don't buy it myself.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about it.
We'll see. I don't know. Yeah, I have no idea what's going to happen.
You can't not trade with the USA if you're not in the USA. Maybe a country here or there could not include us at all in their mix.
Right.
I don't think the majority of countries can survive without trading with us.
No, I agree. But what they can do is do a tit-for-tat kind of thing and say, we're going to put imports on, duties on your imports now. And
I think they've been doing that for years, and that's why we're kind of swinging it back the pendulum a bit the other way a little bit.
Clearly, the trade imbalance is obvious.
We never talked about this one. I've always wanted to, on the air with someone else, you know, experienced like yourself. A country like ours, or any other, many countries like ours in the world today, that are rather successful, you know, in comparison to the rest of the countries, I don't know how you cannot have a trade deficit. I am a successful person. I'm going to consume way more than I produce. That's natural, right? You consume a lot. You have excess dollars above just eating and heat.
Right.
So successful countries are automatically going to have a trade deficit. So when I hear on the news that in itself is a problem, that's not true, and I don't buy that.
Well, it's all relative.
Excessive trade deficits,
Exactly.
Okay, but a trade deficit between a country like ours and a country, an average country in the world today, is a normal state of economics.
I agree, yes.
And if you think this it's something other than that, you need to go learn and read a little bit.
I agree. Okay. But you're right.
You can exacerbate it.
Exactly. I agree. Right. But I think also we live in our economy, we live in a world where we're encouraged to borrow money, right?
We're
constantly consuming. Constantly putting our face. Oh. What did you say to me seconds before we came on the air? What was the,
I said three things that tell me the markets are very high priced right now, and the economic cycle is late stages. Auto sales are down, and the 100% home equity loan is back.
Right, so the 100% home equity loan is a perfect example of what I'm talking about, right? So there is constantly pressure, not pressure, but encouragement.
Yes.
From
spend, nonstop.
From you know, corporations in corporate America just spend. Right,
the
right.
ad that I saw, or the other one I saw, was a car dealership that ran an ad that said if you have a $350 take-home pay, you qualify for $30,000 for a car. Whew. Can you imagine telling some young person that has that kind of income that they should spend $30,000 on a car?
No.
Ridiculous. We got to stop. We all have to stop sending these terrible messages to our young people. And it shows up in marketing and advertising. The loan commercial that I saw last week was for a 100% home equity loan. And the person, the spokesperson, said, use the money for vacation. Pay off other debts. Because you're not paying off anything when you do that. You're just trading pockets, right?
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right.
Pay off, more misleading nonsense.
Yeah.
Pay off all your debts. You didn't pay off anything. The debt's in a different place now.
Right.
Okay. And then the last thing the spokesperson said, which I could not believe, was, buy a car, do this, do that, pay off your debts. Oh, just put the money in the bank.
Put the money in the bank.
That's exactly what she said. And I thought to myself, that commercial needs to be ripped off the air right away. And telling people that make $350 a week that they should buy a $30,000 car is the worst thing I've ever heard of a person doing to another human being. And young people don't know these things. This is complex stuff. They figure if the bank qualifies for me, how can it be wrong? I understand that thinking as a young person. That's totally normal, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right,
so the misleading, I know that you all know me pretty well by now, and these things really bug me. I'm just my nature, you know. But it doesn't bug me for me. I'm not going to make these mistakes. It bugs me for the nice, innocent young people that are trying to learn good money habits, and we aren't helping them.
So what do? How do you prevent these types of advertising?
We need heavier regulations in the financial field on advertising. I've always said that. Yeah, not right. less. I want more.
Right, yeah.
I want 100% of financing to be against the law if I was in charge of that. We'd not be allowed to do that. That wrecks people's lives. One thing goes wrong when you do that. What happens now?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
One little thing goes wrong in your life and you're a disaster. Wreck a marriage, young family, ruin relationships. Oh, it's just horrible. Horrible stuff. Horrible stuff. So we need to have rules that say you can't do these things. Hey, we got rules that are saying no more commissions allowed in retirement accounts coming up.
That's a good one.
Which is a great one. Why can't we get an ad that says you can't advertise 100% financing? It's bad message.
Yeah.
And it hurts the youngest people amongst us who are still learning about money. You know, I can understand a young person saying, hey, if the bank qualifies me for it, the bank said I can afford it, who the hell are you? Well, who the heck are you? Pardon me.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right.
But we know that that's not right. You're old enough to know that.
Right. But 0% financing, if you're responsible.
It can be wonderful.
It can be wonderful.
That's right. It's a double-edged sword.
You know.
Not if you think because that's such a good deal, I can now buy a brand new car when you really shouldn't do that at a young age.
Right, right.
So it can backfire either way. You know, either way.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
But, I mean, telling people to take out 100% equity and put the money in the bank is terrible. Terrible, terrible stuff, and I'm embarrassed. I'm a leader in the financial field, and I'm embarrassed that that this happens, and that we don't care more about the consumer to send good messages only. I guess they feel they can't sell them stuff if they give them honest messages. There's always going to be some kind of a gimmick.
Yeah, unfortunately, many times that's the way it seems to be the case.
Yeah,
sell them something.
Yeah, sell them something.
What if they don't need anything? What if they're all set?
Yeah,
that's not good enough.
That's not good enough. What if what they're doing is just fine?
Right. That's how many of these giant corporations
operate.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anytime I go and look at cars, I love having the salesman follow me around like a puppy, telling me how smart it is to lease a car, and I don't tell him who I am. He starts babbling all this financial advice of what a good idea leasing is. This is how everybody does it today. You know, this is the best way to do it. You know. And I just want to.
You know, there's a reason the dealership really wants you to take out a lease.
Oh, I know why. That's right. Why? Yeah. What'd you say they call
it? They make a ton of money.
What'd they call it in college?
A fleece.
A fleece, not a lease. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
My story was when I took finance, one of my finance classes in college, we spent a week doing leases. And the professor started by saying, here's the one thing you got to remember about a lease. One side wins and one side loses. He goes, and we're gonna just look at a bunch of examples and figure out which side won and which side lost.
I think if you're leasing a commercial equipment, it's different. It's tax deductible.
Right.
Individual people to lease a car is the worst financial decision you can make about buying a car. There's no worse way of buying it.
Right, and those are most of the cases we looked at in class were a corporation with equipment and stuff like that, and it gets complicated and tough on those situations.
I think who leases cars on the private side is people don't have cash.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just you don't have cash.
I could drive this wonderful car.
Yeah, right. Nothing.
Just that? Only that monthly payment?
Right, right. And then pay for it for 3 years and give it back. See, I can't do that.
Yeah, right.
I can't do that. But I will tell you, we'll close before we go to our break and say that don't lease a car most of the time. There's always exceptional circumstances. I think one of the best cars to purchase is a car coming off a lease, because people lease cars can't get a scratch on them, or they pay for every scratch.
Right.
They leave in the garage the last 7 months of the lease because they're over the mileage limit.
Right.
Right?
Right,
so
right.
Don't lease a car. But if you find a new car you like, go into a car dealership. I used to do this. Give them my business card and say, when a car, that model comes back in off a lease, it's 3 years old, call me and I'll buy it immediately. Right off, I'll buy it that day. And I bought three or four cars that way. And I always got really nice cars.
Nice.
Well, think about it. If it's a lease, like I said, you can't abuse it, you can't overdrive it,
right,
or you get a big fat bill when you return it. So sure, no one does it. Many lease cars spend the last half of the lease in the garage and don't even get used, you know. But they're great cars to purchase because people are very, very, very anal about taking care of them. And so, no, I didn't say rent the cars. That's the last car to buy. People beat those things in like a, you know, like
right,
a, like a, yeah, right. They beat them to death. But a rental, no rental cars. Don't lease a car, but purchase a car in year three that's coming off a lease, I think is the best car value there is. This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790 with Nate and Steve Bove, and we'll be right back.
Sponsored by United States Traffic Network. Looking to add your talent to a dynamic company? United States Traffic Network seeks a motivated account executive to join the sales team. Send your resume to ustrafficnetwork.com/careers.
I'm talking honest pricing with your local roofing, siding, and window expert, Tom Marshall of Marshall Building and Remodeling. Tom, what can you tell homeowners right now who are thinking about having a new roof, siding, or windows installed in their homes?
Well, as you know, Matt, some manufacturers have already raised their pricing for spring, and now Mastic and CertainTeed, the country's two largest, have announced price increases in the next 4 to 6 weeks on all roofing and siding. So anyone thinking about this type of work should at least get a free estimate and take advantage in saving money now. Lock in a price and schedule for spring or summer. And I have to say, Matt, whether the people call us for the estimate or someone else, it just makes good sense to call now.
You couldn't be more honest than that, Tom, and you're right. If you need new roofing, siding, or windows, and you want to save some money, why hold off? Call and get that free estimate from a company you know and trust. And remember, with Marshall, you don't pay anything until your work is complete. So do what my family did and call Marshall Building and Remodeling today. 800-866-1499. That's 800-866-1499. Or visit MarshallBR.com. Tell them, Tom.
We're your local roofing, siding, and window people.
Thinking about life insurance? What if you could make one free phone call and learn your best price from nearly a dozen highly rated price competitive companies? Well, that's exactly what happens when you call SelectQuote Life. For example, George is 40. He was getting sky-high quotes from other companies because he takes meds to control his blood pressure. But when I shopped around, I found him a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $25 a month. I'm SelectQuote agent Dan Savino, and believe me, if SelectQuote isn't shopping for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 800-519-0447. That's 800-519-0447. 800-519-0447. Or go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
An important message from Medicare.
Hi, Sarah. I just spoke with Pamela. Did you know the health care law gives us new Medicare preventive benefits? Like a yearly wellness visit.
Well,
It's our chance to talk with our doctor about our care.
That's what I would.
Medicare also covers recommended cancer and preventive screenings.
Actually, I was the one who told Pamela.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
Learn more at Medicare.gov or call 1-800-MEDICARE. And tell your friends and family. Share the news. Share the health.
These days, everyone seems to be talking about Rhode Island's economy. Where will the opportunities be? What can we do to prepare for the future? Well, at the Quonset Business Park, the future is right now. Why? Because at Quonset, over 10,000 people are working at growing companies in every sector of our economy. And these companies are hiring. There could be a bright future for you at Quonset, too. To find out, visit us at QuonsetJobs.com. Quonset, come share in our success at QuonsetJobs.com.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show on AM 790. This is History Night on the program, and we're talking about a little bit about history. History meaning the last 7 days is history also, right?
In some respect, it must be, yes.
Right.
This afternoon was history.
Yes, yes. And, you know, we need to know that history as well. But we learn more from, I think we gain more from, the longer-term perspective on history. How does knowing about history help us? You know that we don't really believe too much in predicting things. I don't believe in my ability to do that, really. And I don't believe in anybody else's ability to do it either. That's just an opinion, you know, as far as predictability goes. But having knowledge of history and what's happened in the past, I think will help you know how to react. I can't know where the bear is in the woods, but there is a training program, right, on how to react to the bear. There is no training program to find the bear. There's only one to react to it correctly so you don't get killed. And I think it's a lot like finances the same way. How about the people who sold out their 401k plan in their 30s when it was down 50% twice in the 80s and 90s there, when those two big dips?
Yeah.
There's a classic example of if they had a perspective, they wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, if you could show them, you know,
how it never failed to come back once.
Right.
In history, which is what I would have tried to do in a conversation.
Yeah.
And get them to buy while it's low. But instead they sold out, and that's a classic example of what I'm talking about.
It can be so difficult because you're talking about, you know, human emotion and fears and psychology. Yep. And unfortunately, there are some people, I hate to say it, can't be helped sometimes. You can't help someone who doesn't want to help themselves, you know, is the old saying.
Sure, something, maybe somebody's just so risk-averse. That's their nature.
Well,
if you're saying,
if they were so risk averse, they wouldn't have been in that situation in the first place, right? That account would have went down 50%.
You wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
You wouldn't think so.
Or you would.
You would think with professional guidance, they would identify the risk comfort level.
Right. Exactly.
But sometimes people invest on their own.
Oh, right.
I've had people tell me they're conservative. I look at the account; it's the most aggressive stuff in the world because and they think it's conservative because it happened to have worked well lately.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah.
Remember, folks, all investments are bad unless they go up in value.
Right, right. And I think a lot of people sometimes forget that there's a difference between there's a lot in between stocks and CDs.
You heard me say that in the meeting today.
Yeah, with that, I like that one. I remember that one.
With that nice gentleman we were talking to. So, I said to him, can we please stop the conversation about it's either all risk or no risk?
Right,
because there's a million things in the middle that not too many people talk about.
Yeah, it gets confusing because there's a plethora of things you can invest in.
Preferred stocks, high-yield bonds, real estate, REITs. Yeah. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff that isn't the S&P.
Right, right. You know? Yeah, most of it is not the S&P.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're older and you have a larger account, you have to have you know, a lot more than that. That's probably one holding of 10.
Right.
If you're older and you have more of a savings element to deal with.
I had a client in the office a couple weeks ago who had a variable annuity he had purchased years ago with someone, and they were saying they were very risk averse, and I could tell just by the way they were talking and the way that they just presented themselves, their body language, everything.
Yeah.
They seemed very conservative, risk averse people. And the annuity was a growth mutual fund in the variable annuity, you know. And I said, "This doesn't seem to jive with what you're telling me."
It has a beta of 1.
Exactly. Right.
And they sound like a beta of 0.3.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right.
A 0.4 or something.
Right.
0.25 or something.
So beta of being, for those listening not aware, beta is just a measurement of risk compared to the stock market. So if the fund has a beta of 1, it has the equal amount of risk as the stock market. If it's got 0.3 beta, it's only got 30% of the risk,
right,
which means it will only move about 30%. If the stock market goes up $1, then your investment goes up 30 cents.
It'll trail behind it, both up and down.
Correct.
The slide,
right.
You know.
Right.
Beta is, you know, like Nathan said, 1.0 means equal risk to the stock market. That means you could have a 50% decline any moment. So if you're unsure about the risk of your account, get another opinion on it and have somebody look at it and tell you about the beta of your account. To me, at my age, I'm almost 60, beta's got to be below 6, below 0.6, and the dividend's got to be 3 or 4. That's what my comfort level is with my own portfolio and people that are my age. Now, every time you and I've talked about you, I never mentioned the dividend investment once, probably, because of your age.
Right,
it's
right.
Very,
right,
very
right,
different.
Right.
And it's very important, I think, for people to understand that there's someone, and there's many of us out there, not just you and I, of course, who have the skills to understand everyone's different.
Right.
Right? I mean, some people would be naive enough to say, well, if these investments your son has are so wonderful, how come you don't have them, big shot? I'm not 30. That's why. You know, I mean, they're right for him, but then it may not be right for me. So, yeah.
For sure.
This is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, 437-5000, 1-888-345-0790. Podcasts available at 790business.com. Auto sales are off quite a bit. That's one of the first signs. It's the most durable thing we buy other than a house. bigger, lasts longer, and costs a lot of money, big decision. People don't usually buy a car until the cycle has been running for a few years and they feel comfortable. And the fear is in the rearview mirror, you know. And that's why usually when auto sales are peaking, that's a sign of an economic top coming. And when they start to decline, it usually means we're already starting. A lot of people would say you're already in the recession if auto sales are down. At the very, very beginning.
I've noticed in the office a couple of clients calling in and having their IRA required minimum distributions donated to charities, which I've been in the business now for 3.5 years. Hmm. And it was the first two I've ever heard of in our office happened in the last 2 months.
Nice.
Which is nice. But to me, that is a signal of a market top. Now, it's a small sample size, only two. But if I got another one or another two in the next couple of months,
right.
People are not going to donate their
when they're afraid.
When they're afraid.
No.
They're only going to do it when they feel comfortable.
From comfort.
Right. So I would expect if you could get a hold of, I'm not sure, I've never looked this up, but charity numbers.
Yeah.
You know, how much money is going to charities right now?
I bet you're right.
I bet you it's a lot.
Sure.
Compared to other times.
I'm going to be a little hesitant to give money away if I'm afraid.
Yeah, absolutely.
About my own, I'm going to take care of my own family first. You know, right. love to be able to help others too. That's wonderful. But you're going to take care of home first, usually.
Right.
I would hope so. Anyway, you know, this is the Money Talk Show on AM 790, a station for talk and business. Financial History Night Wednesdays here on the program. Tune in every evening at 5 p.m. for a great Money Talk. Don Sower on Monday evenings, of course. Tuesday night, Don and his daughter, Donna Grace. That's a unique show. Having two top flight financial people together at one time like that with 30 years difference in age, I think that's powerful. It's just such a variety of viewpoint, and you know, it's great. And I do think that younger people need to work with younger advisors, and older people need to work with older advisors too, because we have a similar mindset about money.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Right.
When I was younger, boy, I mean, those of you who remember the show, I was the most aggressive guy on the team with my money. I never sold out of a down market in my life. I bought every time it dipped, and it worked pretty well, you know. But I'm not that guy anymore, you know. And so I'm more afraid of risk than I was before because I'm older. I'm closer to needing the money, and the pile's bigger. So 50% decline on, you know, $1 million is a bummer.
Yeah, especially when you're
60.
You know, 5 years away from using the money, possibly.
Right.
You know?
So with the beta, I ask clients, how much could you tolerate on paper? And very few of my clients say above half beta. It's about, they don't want any higher than that. So I usually, most of the portfolios are 0.6.
Right.
So around half, you know.
We have, at our office, and we do a lot of research, we use this software called Morningstar. Maybe people may have heard of it. And, I mean, there's literally 300,000 different mutual funds and ETFs, closed-end funds, you know, stocks that we could choose from to put in a portfolio. That's one of the advantages of having an IRA is that you have the opportunity to invest in really anything in the world.
Right.
So one of the things we can do is use these screeners on the software, and one of them very often is beta. So I'll say, let me just look at all the funds that are just, you know, a beta under 0.5. You know, and
so you're going to have no large cap stocks
exactly,
in it at all?
Right. Gotcha. So it eliminates a lot of that stuff. And then I can filter it all through. But let me look at all those ones and has a dividend, around 3-4%. And that lowers it now down to another smaller category,
sure.
You know, a bunch of investments.
Isn't that a fascinating science, doing that type of research, knowing what criteria to use?
But even then,
it's still hard.
It's still like 20,000 choices.
Come up, yeah.
You know, it's like...
I walk in the door and say, Nate, you got that report for me? You hand it to me. It's 916 pages in a wheelbarrow. And I say, what am I supposed to do with this, son? Right? So is there 310,000 in there now?
Something like that, yeah.
That's crazy. Hey, this is Nate Bove and Steve Bove, History Night, and we're history for a few minutes for our bottom of the hour break, but we'll be right back.
Happiness is looking and feeling 10 or 20 years younger than your stated age. With the proper use of medical advances, the goal of looking young indefinitely can be achieved. Hi, I am Dr. Steve Pettirutti, Medical Director for Intellectual Medicine 120. The doctors and nurses at our centers specialize not only in aesthetics, but in face, body, and health-centered life extension. Getting rid of wrinkles, reversing sagging skin, erasing age spots are only the beginning. Maintaining hormonal health, muscle tone, mental sharpness, vascular health, high energy, and sexual vitality are essential parts of the equation. Intellectual Medicine 120 puts real, affordable anti-aging medicine within reach of nearly everybody. great face, great body, great energy, great life. To learn more about intellectual medicine, listen to my show every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. right here on WPRO.
Hi, my name is John Campagnone Jr. of Caserta Pizza. When Caserta was first opened, the most important thing was to put out a product that was tasty and unique, and that people in Rhode Island would come back for over and over. For generations, Rhode Islanders have enjoyed our pizza and our famous Wimpy Skippy. If you haven't tasted a Caserta pizza, then you are surely missing out on something very special. Call 272-3618 or stop in at 121 Spruce Street in Providence. Open Tuesday through Sunday. And remember, if you're not eating Caserta's, you're not eating pizza.
Darren College, a former NFL Super Bowl champion, signed the most important contract of his life to serve in the Army National Guard.
I've had a lot of military in my family. It's a big part of what my family's done for a long time. I want to go out there and make a difference. I didn't find that working behind a desk, so for me it was a pretty easy decision to make. And then the opportunity to serve my community and serve my country was just icing on the cake.
To learn how to be part of the Army National Guard, log on to NationalGuard.com. Sponsored by the Rhode Island Army National Guard. Aired by the Rhode Island Broadcasters Association and this station.
As a small business owner, you're always on the go. So how can you make sure you never miss a customer's call? Grasshopper. That's right. With Grasshopper, you get all of the features of a business phone system that's affordable and incredibly easy to use directly on your cell phone. You get a toll-free or vanity phone number that's memorable and professional. Customers are forwarded to your phone and connected to your team. And you can work from anywhere using Wi-Fi calling or our desktop app. And with our mobile app, your outgoing calls and texts show up as your professional phone number. Voicemails are transcribed and sent to your email, so you can determine their importance at a glance. So whether you're on the go or working from home and need to keep business calls separate, or you simply want a professional tone, Grasshopper makes it happen. Set up your account in just minutes. There are no long-term contracts, and support is 24/7. Get your calls, stay connected, thrive. Now get $20 off your first month when you visit grasshopper.com/radio. Grasshopper.com/radio.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show. We have an off-air caller asking the question, is there any reason for an older person? Now, I don't know what that means. Is that me? Older? 58? I don't know. I'm guessing not. I'm guessing he means a little older than me.
Okay.
Meaning not maybe even retired, you know? But we're not sure. In bonds, yes, I would think. It depends what older is. You know, I mean, if you're 99, it maybe all belongs in the bank. I don't know. That's a tough one.
It also depends on how much assets do you have? What's your estate plan? Are you planning on leaving money behind?
How astute are you? How well do you understand it? All that, yeah.
Yeah.
I would think most older people would have a place for bonds somewhere in their life.
Yeah.
Somewhere, I would think.
Pretty safe assumption to make.
Yeah. But you know, not the traditional 30-year treasuries right now. You buy those right now, you're gonna get a black eye when rates rise.
Right.
Short duration bonds and floating rate would be the two categories of bonds that I would like right now. And yes, to our off-air caller, I do think that there's a place for bonds for someone who's older. I'm not sure what that means. I'm 58. You know, some people would say if interest rates are higher, at some age, you should be in a CD. No risk. I don't know if that's true for everybody, though. I've got clients that are in their 80s, and they would never like that idea.
Mm.
They're comfortable with the investments. You know? I mean,
right.
You and I hear... in general, you know, when you hear the economy has a bad turn or things are questionable, we always run into somebody who thinks our customers are driving us crazy because of this, and they never are.
Right?
Yeah, you're there.
Oh, yeah, you're there every day.
That phone doesn't ring like that at all.
No.
We understand, too, that we have a very experienced client base. Many have been with us 20 years. I have clients now that come in the office that knitted me a bib for you when you were born as a gift, clients of mine. Little toys and gifts for my children as you were born, you know. So they're older, they're more experienced, they've been through the ups and downs a few times. So I think if a financial person was to share that their clients were going kind of that way, they must be younger people, I would think, who are more pressured for money and less experienced at dealing with the ups and downs, I would guess.
Yeah. Again, it comes back to that, how much history have you experienced, you know, or are you aware of, you know, and the more you're exposed to, whether you live through it or whether you studied it, The more prepared and you'll be, and less surprised when something happens.
What was the kicker for me 35, 40 years ago that made me believe that Marcus would recover every time? And I've never wavered off it yet. I didn't waver last time. We got all the shows have been recorded, right?
Yep.
You know what it was that did it? Was missing the opportunity, not buying low two or three times in the first decade of my career and feeling foolish about it.
Mm.
That's what got me to the ironclad mentality I have about the market.
Right.
And we've had 12 major corrections in 86 years, and every single time the market has regained and gone to higher ground. With no exceptions, 12 out of 12. Mm-hmm. So I believe it will always work that way. It'll behave differently, different reasons, but because of the way the fundamentals work in the market, I believe that will be the case, that every market will correct and go to the higher ground. I don't think that'll ever change. How long it will take, who knows? Could it take 8 years, 9 years? You don't know.
Right.
You don't know. Yeah. Hey.
So we're doing a history tonight, right?
Yep.
And I picked one of these really funny, interesting topics tonight, which people, I love it when you get a word.
A word.
That everyone uses, everyone's heard of,
yep.
But no one knows where it came from.
Right.
And one of my favorite ones is Ponzi.
Ponzi.
Right, a Ponzi scheme.
Ponzi scheme.
First of all, what the heck is a Ponzi scheme? Why would you describe what a Ponzi
scheme? A fake.
Scheme? A fraud.
A fraud.
First of all,
misleading.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
So the SEC's definition of a Ponzi scheme is an investment fraud involving the payment of returns to existing investors from funds contributed by new investors, with the organizer usually focusing on soliciting new investors in order to provide promised payouts to earlier investors instead of engaging in legitimate investment activity. So we're going to talk tonight about how to spot these things, and through the history lens, of course, as we do on Wednesday nights.
Mm.
But how did this name come about, Ponzi, right? Well, there was a guy by the name of Charles Ponzi. He was an immigrant from Italy who lived in Boston, Massachusetts, and he developed this famous Ponzi scheme, as we just talked about. It wasn't called a Ponzi scheme, obviously, back then, but a fraud nonetheless. But there was no SEC back then, right? There was not a lot of
it was
cops on the street.
Caveat emptor, buyer beware.
Right, right, right.
Grow up, read the material, make good decisions yourself.
Now, right? Ponzi had a long... checkered, what do you call it, Pat, history of crime, and he spent some time in an Atlanta prison for a while before he moved to Boston. But his whole scheme was around this, I found this fascinating, was around this thing called an international reply coupon. So these coupons were issued by the Universal Postal Union in 1906. They started issuing them. And basically what they were, we had a lot of immigrants, right, coming into the country at this time, and they were writing letters back home to where they came from. So if you were from Italy, you were writing letters back home to Italy. And you could include in your postage an international reply coupon, which allowed the person who was receiving the letter in Italy to mail their response, their reply, back to you with postage covered. So they didn't have to purchase the American postage, you know, living in Italy, which could be difficult and cumbersome. And
currency
expensive.
Conversion could be expensive.
Exactly.
Could be double or triple.
Right.
Right.
That's the key to the whole scheme.
The currency.
Now, he claimed his scheme was, we took these coupons, and because of fluctuations in exchange rates, which they were very wildly going up and down at this time, this was 1920, post-World War I, exchange rates were notoriously very volatile.
Okay.
So his claim was, we can take advantage of an arbitrage opportunity. An arbitrage is the idea of riskless profit, right? You buy one thing in a market and sell it in another market
quickly,
right. And make a profit. And this is what he was claiming.
Right.
So what he did was he started, claim profits of about 400. He could double your money in 90 days. He quit his job. He started his own company. The company was called the Securities Exchange Company. How ironic is that, right? Mm. The SEC. Not
wow.
to be confused with the Securities Exchange
wow.
Commission. But anyway, that was not around yet, again. Right? The SEC, the watchdog, didn't come around until the 1930s.
Hmm.
But he first marketed his investments to Italian immigrants. So this is the first thing you notice about a Ponzi scheme, right? The person is trying to get people who are really close to him, people that they friends, you know, confidants, those kind of things. That's what he did. Most of his early clients were all Italian immigrants because he was an Italian immigrant. They trusted him.
Hmm.
All right. But he hired agents to paid very generous commissions. That's another thing, too, the Ponzi scheme. If the guy selling you is making crazy commissions, that's another warning sign,
right.
a flag
sure.
that something's going on. But a craze starts to set in. You know, people start talking about it. Blah, 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 blah. He hired more agents. By February, he took in $5,000. By March, $30,000. In May, he took in $420,000. Now, this is 1920 we're talking about.
Big money.
Yeah, it's a lot of money back then.
A lot of money now.
And by July of 1920, he had made millions of dollars. Sorry, he had stolen millions of dollars.
That's right.
Did not make anything. But the Boston Post published a very favorable article in July. Now, I don't think that would happen nowadays because there's too many, you know, like I said, watchdogs on the streets for this stuff.
Thank goodness.
But after that article, the next morning, there were thousands of people lined up outside his door waiting to get in and give him their money. And no one really put connected the dots about these reply coupons. It's like, is this even possible? Are there even that many reply coupons in existence that could produce these types of returns?
Right, right.
No, of course not.
Of course not. No, of course not.
So one of the things that gave a kind of a suspicion was that this guy Ponzi lived very luxuriously, or he started to anyway.
Okay.
He paid for his mother's whole family to come over to the U.S. He bought a mansion in Lexington, Massachusetts. And this is nothing to watch out for. So if someone's trying to sell you on some weird investment, and they're large Rolex watch, they're sporting these dynamite suits, driving up on a Ferrari. That's another dead giveaway that you're probably dealing with someone that's not reputable. Doesn't necessarily mean that, but it could mean that.
It's one of many things you look at.
Yeah, exactly. Right. A Boston financial writer who worked for the Boston Post, he accused Ponzi of fraud, and Ponzi sued him. And won. He won.
Because the man couldn't prove it.
I guess so.
You have to be able to prove what you say.
But that gained him even more credibility.
Of course. He went under the microscope and came out unscathed.
Exactly. So it was Clarence Barron, Barron's Magazine.
Really?
Yep. Who worked for the Dow Jones and Company at the time. He starts an investigation into Ponzi's scheme. And he noticed that Ponzi was not investing his own money in the company. Here's another giveaway, right? Ask the guy who's doing this. Are you investing your money in this?
That's right.
He also noted that about 160 million of these coupons would have to be in circulation for it to work, but there are only about 27,000.
Right.
The U.S. Postal Office also...
The math says it can't be.
Yeah, right. Exactly, right.
Right.
The Post Office also noted that there weren't a large amount of these coupons being bought or sold, home or abroad. The U.S. attorney from Massachusetts began to investigate, demanded to inspect the books, and it was all downhill from there. Mm. The collapse started in August when the Boston Post printed a front-page story about his criminal past. Ponzi surrendered soon after that, and he was charged with mail fraud by the federal government. He pleaded guilty in November, and he spent 5 years in prison. He eventually died penniless in Brazil, but investors were ruined. They received 30 cents on the dollar. A total of $20 million was lost.
He ran to Brazil with Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
But,
I'm
about,
tired, forgive
it's
me.
About $225 million today. And that seems like a lot, $225 million. But that is nothing compared to the godfather of Ponzi schemes, who was Bernard Madoff.
Madoff.
I mean, we're talking billions of dollars that guy ripped people off of.
And the math said that couldn't work either.
Yeah.
You tell any experienced financial advisor is 12% return consistent, 1% every year, everybody with experience is going to say, no way, that's impossible. There's no such animal.
Right.
How you doing that? Something's wrong.
Right. But when Ponzi, when Madoff was doing it, it was in the 90s and the market.
It was a go-go period.
To an untrained
Yeah, no, I
ear,
see your point. I see your point.
Yep. It wouldn't be that outrageous to say, oh, he's making 1% a month. That's what the market. The market's doing twice that.
Was doing
over the last 10 years.
17 per year average.
Yeah, I mean,
right.
So it wasn't. Right. But what was really weird was the lack of variability in the returns.
Right. Right?
It was just consistent 1% every month. Mm. Didn't go up. It wasn't like 2% 1 month, -3 1 month, 5% the next month. It was boom, 1%.
Too much.
Month. Yeah, that's too.
Right.
How do you do that?
Yeah, it's just not natural.
Right.
That's man-made, man-made pattern.
But Madoff, there were some similarities between Madoff and Ponzi. One of the big differences, though, between the two of them was Madoff was an insider. Ponzi was an immigrant. He had no connections to Wall Street or anything like that.
Just a clever rascal.
He was a very clever rascal, exactly.
Yeah, rascal, though.
Madoff, actually, the beginning of his career, the first half of his career, was a legitimate career. He was the former non-executive chairman of the NASDAQ in the early 90s. He founded Madoff Investment Securities in 1960. Mm. He started as a penny stock trader. the firm was one of the top market makers, market maker businesses for Wall Street for over-the-counter stocks, stocks that aren't traded on the
major exchanges. Right.
But he pioneered the use of innovative computer technology to disseminate quotes. The technology that the firm helped develop became part of the NASDAQ. This guy was like
smart.
Guy was smart. He
smart,
was legitimate,
right.
Guy in the industry. People thought of him.
Sure.
Would never. That's one of the reasons that he escaped investigations for so long is that all the SEC people were like, "This is it's Bernie, man.
It's Bernie, man.
I know Bernie's been around forever.
Right, right.
There's no
right.
way. There's no way he would do that.
Right,
you know? He's
right.
got too much to lose. He's
right.
just, you know,
yeah,
it'd
right.
be
sure,
crazy.
You
know?
Would think so. Yeah, yeah.
One of the great quotes from the Wall Street Journal when Bernie was in the 90s, it said, I looked this up, this is great, it said, quote, "He is one of the masters of the off-exchange third market and the bane of the New York Stock Exchange. He has built a highly profitable securities firm, Bernard L. Madoff Investment Securities, which siphons a huge volume of stock trades away from the big board of the New York Stock Exchange. The 740 million average daily volume of trades executed electronically by the Madoff firm off the exchange equals 9% of the New York exchanges."
Wow.
"Mr. Madoff's firm can execute trades so quickly and cheaply that it actually pays other brokerage firms a penny a share to execute their customers' orders, profiting from the spread between the bid and ask prices that most stocks trade for." So this guy was plugged in, and this was written before he started taking on and managing money, which is where he got in trouble.
Right.
And this is when they were just executing trades. They were brokers.
It was administrative only.
Yeah, right. They weren't making...
They were fiduciaries at that point.
Right, exactly. So, like you said, he was promising, like, you know, 10 to 12% a year and 1% a month. It was just, you know, nonstop. But between 1982 and 1992, the S&P averaged 16.3 a year.
Yeah, that's why. That's why you got away with
that's
it.
That's why, one of the reasons. There were lots of reasons why, but yeah, that was definitely one.
That was the camouflage, the backdrop.
Yeah.
Psychological camouflage.
Yeah.
There's a new term. Psychological camouflage.
Write that one down.
Write that one down. That's a good one.
I like that.
Hey, we got a break coming? Yeah, I think we do.
All right.
This is a History Night on the Money Talk Show, and we'll be right back.
I need a new heating system. Where do I start?
R.I. Pipe Guys.
Our water heater is on the fritz.
R.I. Pipe Guys.
We want to convert from oil to natural gas.
R.I. Pipe Guys.
What about...
R.I. Pipe Guys is the place to start for all your heating, cooling, and plumbing needs. From installing a new heating system or an ice-cold AC unit, R.I. Pipe Guys are your guys and offer superior service and quality. Everybody's got a guy, but R.I. Pipe Guys are the guys. 401-603-4016 or visit ripipeguys.com for details. Details, rebates, and special offers.
Adopting a new pet? Moriarty's Fence can help. Their pet safety solutions work year-round, and so do they, with offices in Portsmouth, Warwick, and North Stonington. Call 800-225-0808 for a free site visit, pet evaluation, and estimate, or schedule online at moriartysfence.com. Discover why more pet owners and pet professionals choose Moriarty's Fence, your invisible fence brand pet solutions experts. Moriarty's Fence, 800-225-0808. Keeping pets safe since 1986, guaranteed.
Thinking about life insurance? What if you could make one free phone call and learn your best price from nearly a dozen highly rated price competitive companies? Well, that's exactly what happens when you call SelectQuote Life. For example, George is 40. He was getting sky-high quotes from other companies because he takes meds to control his blood pressure. But when I shopped around, I found him a 10-year, $500,000 policy for under $25 a month. I'm SelectQuote agent Dan Savino, and believe me, if SelectQuote isn't shopping for your life insurance, you're probably paying too much.
For your free quote, call 800-519-0447. That's 800-519-0447. 800-519-0447. Or go to SelectQuote.com. Since 1985, we shop, you save.
Get full details on the example policy at SelectQuote.com/commercials. Your price could vary depending on your health, issuing company, and other factors. Not available in all states.
Why do we call it small business? Why not agile business? Nimble business? Dance circles around the big, bulky behemoths business. Ooma Office, the small business phone solution, has a virtual receptionist to direct calls to the right extension and a mobile app to help you answer while away from the office. About all that's small really is the price, starting at only $19.95 a month. Visit Ooma.com, that's OOMA, or call 866-649-9377 to find out more. Ooma, the phone your small business deserves.
This is Money Talk with Steve Bove, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
Welcome back to the Money Talk Show. History Night on the program. The professor is here tonight, Professor Nathan. We're talking about Ponzi schemes, at least we were before the break. And then we went to Madoff. When I heard the news hit, the first thing that hit me was the name Madoff.
Madoff with the money.
Oh, God. I said, I was so embarrassed. I'm so tired of this stuff.
You never thought of that,
producer,
right?
Our producer didn't strike him. He's getting a kick out of that one. Very nice young man. But yeah, I heard that. I went, oh, you know, but you got, now that you're into this 3 years, you got to have that same feeling. When you hear something like this, you got to think, oh, come on.
Right.
We're trying to do the right thing here.
Right.
And most people in the business are.
Right.
You run into people like this, it makes everything difficult for everybody.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a simple way to explain how to avoid a situation like that. You know, one of the things is that Madoff not only was the advisor, but he was also the custodian.
The fox was watching the hen house.
The fox is watching the hen house. So what that means is that not only was he in charge of, you know, making decisions about the money, much like our firm is, but he had possession of the money. So when he took on a new client and they wanted to deposit some money for Bernie to manage, they made the check payable to Bernard Madoff.
Right.
If you come into our firm and you want to invest some money with us, you don't make the check payable to our firm.
Or me.
Or us, right. You make it payable to National Financial Services, which is a custodian.
A third party.
Right. And that should be a law.
It should be.
It should be a law in this country advisor cannot be the custodian. This would never happen.
Why isn't that? Why don't we have that law?
Well, the answer to all your questions, sir, is money.
Yep.
Yeah.
Somebody's lobbying to stop
exactly,
that.
Exactly, right.
So now, who would have that kind of dough?
Oh, big.
And why would they want? And who would want us? Who would be motivated to want to stop that from happening? I think it's the people that are in the hardcore sales end of the financial world.
I guess I don't.
Yeah,
know.
Yeah. They're not fiduciaries thinking like that. That's for sure.
No. The FSI, the Financial Services Institute, which is a lobbying firm for advisors. You know, if you're an advisor, you have to pay dues to that. You pay them. I pay them. It's part of the gig. You have to contribute to them. But they lobby against the fiduciary rule.
I know.
I don't agree. I mean, I don't really. Yeah, I don't think I agree.
Right,
you know, what
right,
I mean?
So
it's kind of a catch-22 situation. It's kind of ironic, but
it's a tough one. Yeah.
I don't know. I assume that the answer is money. You know,
the main argument against the fiduciary standards is, what are the people going to do with have smaller money? They're all going to be left out in the cold. A big shot advisor's not going to want to handle them. Look what Commonwealth did.
Yeah.
Just a local broker dealer we work with.
Yeah.
Come up with a beautiful solution.
Right.
To me, never have I seen a better deal for the small investor than what you have to offer right now.
Right. It is more expensive over the long haul for those clients because they have to pay a management fee now.
Right.
But it's safer. Your money is more diversified
more diverse.
This way. You know,
lower cost investments.
Right. So
inside.
Typically, if a young person came in and had $5,000 to invest in, you know, an IRA, typically they'd be getting one or two mutual funds.
Right.
In the old brokerage system. Now, with the system we have in place,
maybe six or eight.
Right, they've got like six, seven, or eight.
They rebalance.
And they rebalance over time.
Is that reduces risk.
Yeah, it reduces risk. So there's a lot, you get a lot more for what you're paying for. And on a $5,000 account, you know, if you're paying 1%,
it's not a lot.
That's not a lot.
No, I'm very proud of the industry now for coming up with that.
Right.
Because that was the hole in the argument. There would be nothing
right.
for somebody who's got $5,000. Okay, right. You big shots.
Yeah.
Get all that big money, you know?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
What about real hardworking folks that don't have that kind of money?
Yeah.
And to some extent, it's true. It's pushed me in a corner as a 40-year experienced advisor, right? The laws are set up that you have to kind of make up your mind. You either have to be managing actively,
right.
or they don't want you doing both.
Right.
They want you to invest with both. But for those of you who have heard that story, just my opinion, I think that the industry across the board is doing a pretty good job coming up with programs to make sure everyone has an opportunity. And the costs are lower than ever initially. You say about the costs over time are more expensive. That's assuming you could, this is my thoughts anyway, correct me if I'm wrong. The cost over time, because it's actively managed, is higher if compared to a one-time purchase of an A-share mutual fund and you keep the fund for 20 years. No one ever does that. They get talked into moving it to Fidelity 3 years later, pay the load again.
Right.
You know what I mean? So normally the commission accounts always assume that the commission is paid once on a dollar over a long period of time. And that's not reality.
Right.
Never works that way.
Yeah. Right.
The average commissionable dollar in the industry might only stay put for 3 or 4 years.
Right.
And it's on the move, usually because of some salesman's needs.
Yeah, I guess. Plus, also, if you're adding to the account,
yeah,
you know.
Different, too.
Yeah, that's different, too. Yeah. There's so many different things that go into it.
Any other big Ponzi schemes? Madoff, of course, was a big name, and Ponzi was the original name came from. Yeah, yeah.
So one of the things that they had in common, Madoff and Ponzi, was they started their marketing of their business, or their pond—they're not their business, their scheme.
It might have been legitimate when they began.
Right. Well, Madoff was.
And drifted.
Right, but Ponzi was not.
Was not, no.
But like I said, Ponzi, he marketed a lot to Italian immigrants, people who were like him, who trusted him. Sure. Madoff did the same thing. It was a lot of wealthy Jewish people because he was Jewish.
Sure.
And people trusted him in that sense. But no major Wall Street firm was investing in Madoff. It was only high net worth individuals. Later, they had charities and hedge funds that got involved. But in the beginning, there was no firms that were working with him. It was only individuals.
Because something seemed wrong. I don't know.
I think so, yeah.
To that experienced
right,
eye.
Right.
Something may not be able to figure out what it was, but something didn't
no
seem
advertising.
Right.
He didn't do any advertising. It was all kind of gave this illusion of exclusivity.
Yep.
He collected $10 billion in 20 years in bogus investments. Imagine that.
Whoa.
$20 billion.
Whoa. And go through your life every day, walking down the street, looking people in the eye, and perpetuating the myth, the lie.
There was a guy
over and over again. Amazing.
Harry Markopoulos was his name, I think.
Money makes people crazy.
He blew the whistle in 1999 to the SEC.
Excellent.
And they just said, nah.
Not Bernie.
2001, Barron's article had an article about him, and Barron's noted that they were charging commissions instead of fees. On that level of business, it doesn't make any sense. I mean, from a business standpoint, you'd rather be charging fees
right.
when on that giant book of business.
Right, sure.
You know, it'd be more profitable, more consistent for the income.
Maybe he couldn't pull the scheme off under that kind of a structure.
Right, that's what Barron's was trying to say. You know, something's
right.
up here.
Something's
doesn't
wrong.
Make sense. You
right,
know?
You wouldn't keep the business structure that way at the volume they're doing.
Right. But in December of 2008, his sons turned him in. Because he broke down and told his sons what was going on.
Yeah. What a sad story.
Yeah, a lot of victims in that.
Yeah,
you know, pension plans. The Royal Bank of Scotland lost $600,000. HSBC lost $1 billion. Bank of Canada was involved at the end.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Hey, thanks for a great lesson again in history, Nate. This is Steve and Nate Bove on the Money Talk Show. And, of course, tune in tomorrow night for Don Soa right here on AM 790, your station for talk and business. Working for the public radio. And the beat is around, the sack on their back, moving careful and slow. It's money that matters. Hear what I say. It's money that matters in the USA. There's absolutely nothing traditional about my small business. And when it comes to technology, I need someone who understands.